You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
This week on The Dan Nichols Show, forget that Sasha kid, the real deal out of Bishops. He turned the world upside down as a young rugby talent, is someone who's since travelled the world. I'm not sure there's a rugby league he hasn't played in at some point. In fact, player of the season in Malawi 4 years ago and a very strong stint in Belgium not long before that. The career is still far from done, but he does find himself back in South Africa for a brief stint, which gives me the very welcome opportunity to spend some time hanging out with Tim Swale, welcome.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Oh, lovely to have you. Quite fortuitously, I happened to be hanging out with your hard-drinking cousin in London last week. Tim's going to be in Cape Town, and my eyes lit up. Well, here's an opportunity to catch up with somebody who's led a very unorthodox rugby journey, but all the more interesting for it for me, and one that's certainly not done, but you've already packed a huge amount into it. How do we come to find Tim Swale back in Cape Town at the moment?
Well, first of all, I had to leave London because Connor was making me drink too many beers.
Of course, is Connor Simpson-Crabbe, who's a great fan of the show and an unemployed South African living in a corner of Putney.
Yeah, I think he's moving a bit more north, but he is, yeah, and he's. I have to keep in good relations with him because he's. I'm going to marry my cousin next year, so yeah, have to keep that one good.
She could do better, but we'll see how it goes.
Definitely, but yeah, I'm in Cape Town now for the. Kind of foreseeable. My wife and I just had a kid about 6-7 weeks ago, which has been really special. And I was meant to be actually in the second season of the MLR, but I ended up not going back to Chicago. A few things kind of didn't work out with the league. And I'm looking for my next opportunity, plus might even call it on the playing career and go into what's next, which will be still in high performance and rugby.
It's a very interesting time in any athlete's career, and we'll delve into that in a moment. But let's go back to a career that's framed for many people of late by a quite wonderful coming to light moment that saw some terrific social media coverage, where as a relatively young rugby player, but one who was already making waves and catching eyes, you got a message, not terribly well spelt, from a very enthusiastic, very young, I think 9-year-old rugby player, to tell you how much he adored you, how much you were his absolute favourite. I think it was you and Dylan Lades were his two favourite players, and how one day he hoped to be a player like you. And I think it's fair to say that Sasha Feinbogenkomba-Zulu's dream has come true.
Yeah, he's definitely become that, and times it by 10. What a great guy. It was quite a cute little message. Back in the day when I was, I think, in matric and he was 9 years old. And if it helped him 1% or so, you know, it's really nice to see those types of things. And we've known each other for a while since then. I remember his brother asked me to come watch him play when he was under 16 too. And I watched this kid and I was very impressed. And then when I moved back from England to, what is that, in 2020-ish, just post-COVID, I was at Western Province and Stormers, and that's when he began his professional career. So we kind of, you know, were in that environment together too, which was really cool. And then I literally hadn't seen him for a few years post that, and I saw him the other day, and I was like, you know, starstruck in a way. You know, he's just kind of, grown so much as a person, as a player, and it's been amazing to see.
You'll be able to identify with his story in that you were in a very similar space at school when Sasha was this absolute schoolboy sensation. Everybody already talking about this kid is the next big thing. And those were very much the conversations around a schoolboy Tim, because I remember people talking to me and say, hey, this kid has just got something special. And watching you for the first time and realizing, yes, he does. And the great players always have that extra half a second. They somehow know what's going to happen before it's happening. And you can see that with players who've got something really special, and it's a great blessing to have that ability, but there is the flip side where it comes with so much expectation, especially in a country like South Africa, where schoolboy rugby is this uncontrollable beast of a game where we delight in watching it and cheering on the players, but it does place an enormous amount of pressure on kids who are just trying to find their way in life, let alone rugby.
Yeah, I suppose the difference with myself and Sasha in matric was that he actually didn't play much rugby in matric because of COVID. He must have played one or two games, whereas I probably peaked in matric, and it's kind of, you know, not a struggle, but I've, you know, I've jumped across a lot of teams, and, you know, I try to see the positives in that too, because, you know, you learn different cultures about people and high performance in different ways. But no, yeah, there's a lot of that expectation, and I see South African schoolboy rugby probably more professional than the under 23 provincial stuff in South Africa at the moment. Something like the Currie Cup has maybe fallen away over the years, but schoolboy rugby has probably grown kind of more on a fan base than the Currie Cup. And, you know, coaches that get opportunities to either go to an under 23 province lines or whatever, as opposed to in high school, like a Paul Jim, Paul Boys, sometimes nowadays they're opting for that high school option because it's become a bit like the college football in America.
Now, look, I know Russie's been trying to get the Paul job for a while, but he's going to have to stick with the Springboks until he gets it. It initially seems, well, this is a great thing. It's great for schoolboy rugby. It's doing well. There's lots of people supporting it. It's flourishing. But I do wonder sometimes to the counterpoint of that. And are these kids who are coming through this space being afforded a semblance of a real childhood? Are they perhaps losing touch with some of the other elements of what that growth period of life should be? Is schoolboy rugby 100% healthy as you see it?
You know, it's exciting for sure, but is it healthy? Probably not. There needs to be a bit of a balance. You know, I went to Bishops, and as you mentioned,
it took you almost 4 minutes to tell me that, which is a new record for anyone who's been on the show who was at Bishops.
No, as you said, and their rugby has maybe gone downhill in the last few years. But, you know, with demands for schools like Bishops, Rondebosch, Shacks, just to get in academically, does rugby need to be your main marketing, you know, form of marketing? Whereas I feel it does bring the school together on a Saturday, and you have, you know, I'm obviously biased, but, you know, that culture and the, you know, a packed field, derby days, you're not losing 60-0, it's a close game. And I think Bishops are trying to make a comeback in that regard, but then you go to some other schools like your Grey Blooms, your Paul schools, Paul Roos, and they're running high performance programs there. But, you know, it does come a time where they are still under 18, they're not adults yet. Is it healthy? And I suppose, you know, because the Springboks are doing so well now, we might not see those types of kind of intricate judgmental things if it's healthy or not. But, you know, it's something to be answered for sure.
Well, let's take a very personal example of how that then feeds into life beyond the spotlight of schoolboy rugby. You walked on water, you could have asked anybody to your matric dance, and you know, the queue was miles long. Life as a young Tim Swill looked like it couldn't possibly end better. I mean, basically, you and I were the opposites in high school. It sets you up for greatness, but can also set you up for fall. I think you probably had elements of both of those in terms of where you went. But as you look back now, that journey out of school and into a world of rugby where so much expectation surrounded what your next step would be, how do you in hindsight look at how that journey played out and how it affected not just Tim the rugby player but Tim the person?
Yeah, I suppose I always say that it's similar to going from grade 7 to grade 8. You're the big dog in the prep school, and then you're the new boy in the high school, and then you get a bit of a shock. You know, and it's a bit like the schoolboy rugby. You're at the top of your game, everyone shouting your name at schoolboy level. And then the next year, you may be in an academy, and it can be a bit tough. Whereas I kind of got through the age grade stuff till about 22, 23, like looking good on a good run. And then, you know, I started jumping around to different teams, and that can kind of maybe jolt the momentum. And I suppose, again, you know, you hear these stories of guys that peak late, and sometimes the root of that is sometimes better because you're not falling back on your talent, you're not falling back on your CV per se, and you're kind of doing that silent work where maybe I might have just expected things to happen at times, and all that jumping around, and maybe, you know, having a bit of a more privileged type of come up through Craven Weeks and all these types of things I didn't really realize, and maybe lost time over, you know, being in contention for a Springbok alignment camp or something like that. So I ended up going overseas because I have a British passport, and then kind of jumped around from there, always being second or third choice in the teams, which, you know, in hindsight has been a good thing for my kind of building that resilience up. But at the same time, I probably didn't get enough minutes as I may have wanted. But it's all worked out well, and I've enjoyed the journey so much so far.
It's a tough one for the ego, no matter who you are, when you are the golden boy and suddenly there are other golden boys, and some of them are a bit older and a bit bigger and a bit stronger and a bit more experienced and sit above a pecking order you were kind of expecting to probably just coast into the top of. That's not always an easy one to adjust to, and I appreciate the life lessons and the stronger person it might have made you. That doesn't mean it's that much fun to go through.
No, of course. No, geez, definitely at times it was very tough. You can't use the bishop's name in the UK. They don't even know what bishops is, you know. So
well, they do. It normally involves court cases and quiet payments.
Definitely very tough at times. You know, you lean on a friend network. You lean on your family, sometimes teammates. But at those times when you're not getting the game time you want, you know, you sometimes do rely on people like coaches and mentors in different systems to help you. And at times I probably didn't have that. And that's why I've become very passionate about team culture, performance psychology, and just how things work on an individual basis, as opposed to this whole like everyone's loving rugby and we win on Saturday.
The move that you decided to make, you were part of a very talented group of players in Cape Town, in the team that I think many fans expected you to be a cornerstone of for a decade and more, given how you'd lit up schoolboy rugby in Cape Town, to make that decision to decide, okay, yes, I do have the passport, and yes, most successful English and Scottish rugby teams are based around South Africans. Shall I head over? Was it a relatively straightforward decision, or were there a lot of sleepless nights trying to think out, is this the right path for me?
Yeah, I suppose I got the opportunity to go to the Sharks after doing my age grade stuff at Western Province until under 20. And then I'd signed a 3-year deal at the Sharks. And after 1 year, Jake left. Jake White kind of got me there. And then I ended up going to Harlequins on a loan deal. And then it went quite well. I was getting the game time I wanted, as opposed to maybe the 1 or 2 years before. So then again, it's like that schoolboy era when I'm getting everything I want. So I'm like, why not, let's not just stay here. And I ended up being at Harlequins for 4 seasons. But it kind of brings me back to my SA Under 20 days when I made the SA Under 20 team, but I pulled out of the competition because playing those 4 or 5 games would country lock me. So then making the decision to go to England, I don't know, there was a bit of like up in the air, but okay, let me just go and take this because of that decision. But in hindsight, what would have happened if I'd stayed longer?
Do you regret that decision?
In a way, I don't really regret anything in my career because, you know, something like building resilience in a tougher way, you know, having a tougher route to playing or game time, whatever, builds something in another aspect. So I do see it in a, you know, in a holistic kind of way. You play rugby for 10 to 15 years, but your life ends up being longer. But in saying that, I would have loved to have been a first choice at a team for 2 or 3 years in succession. I suppose you should take all the opportunities that are given to you. So making that SA Under 20 team, I should have probably just played and taken it from there. My era of players has been this group that have gone on to win 2 World Cups and stuff. So who knows? But in saying that, there are no regrets on kind of going abroad, experiencing different cultures from Japan to England, South Africa, and even America now. So it's been great.
A lot of time in England with Harlequins, you had stint in Japan. Also this time in America, which I think for those of us from outside is a slightly quizzical space. We're not entirely sure how rugby works in America. Mm. It's this vast country, clubs in very geographically disparate parts. Most of the teams made up of large Fijians and New Zealanders and South Africans. It's a rugby culture that sometimes almost feels a little forced into place when you look at it from outside. I don't know how accurate that is. It's simply an external opinion as you watch on. What was your sense of the growth of rugby in a country where there is a World Cup on the horizon and where there's a real need for it to grow? But I'm not sure if the desire matches that.
Yeah, well, I suppose in my kind of early to mid-20s, I didn't think I would stay in rugby post-rugby. But as I got closer to 30, I really enjoyed helping the younger guys in the team, whether that was in a mentorship role or even skills training and that type of stuff. So I kind of thought going to America, I would not fulfill, but kind of do those types of things in an up-and-coming league that's hosting a World Cup in the next 5 years. So I kind of thought that would, you know, happen. And it did to a certain extent, but I only kind of lasted a season there. Kind of local player caps and things came into play. And it's weird, there were about 12 teams when I was there, and they've gone down to about 5 teams now. So the growth in the MLR is not really there, but I see World Rugby is putting a lot of money into American rugby, grassroots stuff. And I don't know, it's you know, once ESPN and all these TV kind of big TV corporations show the rugby and kind of back the rugby, then it could take off. But we had our games on some ESPN channel that no one really knew about, and they wouldn't promote it. So, you know, I suppose it'll take something like that and the TV rights to really grow the game. But there are some really good people involved that are trying to grow the game. But again, it's, you know, you have those huge American sports that just kind of dominate.
So are you suggesting that if you were to have walked into a restaurant in Chicago at the same time as Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan might have got more attention than Tim Swift?
Definitely. But in saying that, if you mention anything about sport or professional sport, people go absolutely crazy for it. You know, we say South Africans, obviously, we love our rugby and because of the success. But in America, anything sport-based, professional, this, they go absolutely crazy. They want your number. They want to chat. So there definitely is an infrastructure and kind of a untapped fan base for rugby. But I suppose how do you get that message across?
You had so many different places to travel to. One of the joys for me of being able to do that, if you are the kind of person who seizes that opportunity, is to experience life beyond rugby, to get to soak up a bit of Japanese culture or to hang out in a bit of Chicago. Did that form part of the mindset of Tim the rugby player, that I want to make sure the life experience is every bit as important as the rugby experience?
I definitely think so. I suppose you never know, jumping around and going to all different places might be a deeper kind of thought of me wanting to kind of not escape rugby, but go experience other things apart from rugby while still playing rugby. And, you know, the Japanese culture was amazing. You know, you learn a bit more discipline there. People are extremely well-mannered. And there's a serious hierarchy with age. So, like, I got there on my first few days, and the guys who were born in 93, like me, they would ask me what my phone number was so they could add me to a group, because we bought in 93, and it's all about, you know, your age and hierarchy, and it was amazing, and the work ethic there. And then you go across to England, where there's completely different culture, you know, South Africa and then America. And a big thing that all these things have taught me is that I want to be back in South Africa living and doing what I do post-rugby. You know, a lot of people might not get the fortunate opportunities to go abroad and experience different cultures, but what it's definitely taught me is that I love home, and Cape Town in South Africa is definitely number one.
You also do love rugby, though, and you're rather good at it, and you've had many great experiences. And if you did decide today, well, enough is enough, you've got a great rugby career to look back on. How strong is the itch to still get in one or two last seasons, maybe play that 6-month spell in the Romanian league, or go and do a club spell in Fiji, or do something that might give you that final flourish?
I once played in Romania. For Harlequins, we played against one of them, and it was quite nice. So I think I could definitely do with a stint there. But for me, you know, we had a kid about 2 months ago, and sometimes that puts it into perspective a bit of, you know, rugby can be dangerous at times. You know, there are a lot of things in place to keep it safe. But I've had quite a few surgeries and one or two head knocks of late. So, you know, you do kind of second guess these things. You know, I'd love to end off maybe in a second or third French division. You know, then I've literally done a round the world trip. But I think my passion for what's next definitely overrides me doing one or two more years of playing. Even though I suppose once I start that post rugby stuff, I'll be looking back being like, I want to play. So yeah, we'll see how the next few months goes and what comes around and arises. But yeah, I think I definitely see the post rugby stuff being in the game still as exciting as my career, and maybe one or two more playing gigs.
You're very well placed to be able to continue that role, because on top of the rugby experience and the rugby adventure, there is this new qualification that you do now have, and you've spent the time working through that. I love that primarily because before your career has ended, you've had a sense that, well, there is a horizon. I need to find a passion point that can also be a career point once I end rugby. But it's also an area where we probably don't know as much, focus as much as we should have up to this point. And so you're now in a place where you can give not just rugby players, but athletes and probably just day-to-day people that sense of the mental side of performance that plays such a key role in any success.
Yeah, well, I suppose I look back in my career and I sometimes think, what would I have needed And these types of things that I've got into, like the mental performance psychology stuff, is definitely something I would have needed in my early 20s, especially that transition from high school and winning under 21 Currie Cups to the big leagues, and you playing with Bismarck and Frans Steen, and you're a bit kind of starstruck, and you know you're not kind of focusing on the task at hand. And yes, yeah, so I've become very passionate in that space, and I'd love to help the younger athletes with that, whether it's more on a team culture basis and doing individual stuff there. I also do have a passion for rugby coaching, but you know, you can't do everything in these environments. But I definitely think in South Africa we're way behind on the performance psychology stuff. You know, every team in America has a CMPC, which is a mental performance consultant or a sports psychologist. In England, they've grown in that regard. And you know, guys like Rassie and these good coaches in South Africa, even John Dobson, they kind of are filling that void where they're having these conversations with their players and they're really good at it. Whereas in other teams, maybe in America, they'll have a specialist person who's, you know, doing a bit of career planning or your sports psychology stuff, or kind of culture building. And that's, yeah, something I'm really passionate about.
I can see the excitement as you talk about that, which is a really rewarding sight to have. I want to take you back before we wrap up, because I think you've got some nappies to go and change, to just a couple of games, starting with school and schoolboy rugby. If you haven't been to a big South African schoolboy rugby match, you can't get your head around just what an occasion it is. And that's simply for those of us sitting in the stands. Schoolboy rugby, for me, the Watershed College under 15Bs didn't pick up quite the same audience as perhaps the Bishop's first team. But what was, of all the many games you had leading that famous team, what was the game that, when you look back to an outstanding schoolboy career, that still gives you a few goosebumps as you remember the occasion, the performance, the sense of being an absolute god out on that rugby field?
No, well, I suppose our derby against Rondebosch was our last game, and we managed to beat them, which was great. And then I'd also say a kind of general highlight was, in the last 2 years, we managed to beat all the so-called Afrikaans schools, which is Bulawayo, Paul Boys, Paul German, Paul Rus, in those 2 years, which was great. And you had the likes of the Stephen Kitsoffs of this world playing for Paul Rus, which is, you know, you kind of look back on that and those are fond memories. And yeah, I suppose just sometimes it's not even about having lots of people watching. It's just those young memories of playing rugby, not getting paid for it, that kind of bring out the most enjoyment.
And then finally, the career thereafter in all these different parts of the world, playing with and against some extraordinary players and playing some great clubs and other clubs like Chicago that are maybe still finding their feet a little. What of those experiences gave you the most pleasure?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, traveling with people into different cities to play rugby for a common cause has been great. And, you know, something that it might be quite a small thing, but, you know, if I meet you today and we're in the same rugby team, I can share a bed with you, a bigger bed, that evening, you know, whereas most people are very shy to, like, you know, share a bathroom or share, you know, and rugby brings that camaraderie out, and you meet someone on that day and you already have a common goal and you're literally like family already, you know. So I had some amazing memories in my career, one definitely being in the Sharks when we beat the Crusaders in Christchurch back in the day in 2014. One other highlight would have been playing in the big game for Harlequins. We played against Northampton in front of 82,000 at Twickenham. I played in that game. And then of late, I had a short-term stint at Saracens, and that was probably one of my biggest highlights in my career because it coincided with me and my sports psychology degree and the way they do things in terms of culture and the way they get on with each other and the kind of common themes they have there without it even being spoken about is just amazing. And that's definitely been a big step for me in pursuing these things in terms of culture, team dynamics in rugby, yeah.
And I think probably the perfect club to have given you a reminder of not just what you've done, but what you had the potential to do, and leave you in a space where, certainly from the other side of the table here, I see a man who's very much at peace with where he is, with what he's done, and with what lies ahead.
Yes, for sure. It's been amazing. And I mean, if I can get these roles in certain teams going forward, I'll definitely be at peace with kind of maybe not fulfilling what I could have fully in my career with maybe the talent I had. Maybe next time I'll have to go to a Paul Gym or a Paul Boys to fulfill it.
Tim van der Swiel.
Yeah.
Look, you sell yourself a little short because you have had a terrific career. And I think you're a wonderful example of not always having to tread a conventional path through the sport. And yeah, maybe it could have ended up in slightly different ways. And I think if you had taken those under 20 caps for South Africa, you'd definitely have 2 World Cup medals at the moment. But don't let that linger. What you do have to look forward to, though, is so exciting with the new family, with the new horizons. Maybe there's a season or two of rugby left in, and the fans certainly won't be unhappy if that happens. But I think this new space with the new degree and clearly a great interest in an area that's not been as closely worked on as it should have been is a really exciting one. And I think you're the perfect person for the space.
Thank you, Dan. It's been a privilege to be on your show. And yeah, appreciate the time.
All right, well, from one great former schoolboy rugby player to another, lit up the fields of Bishops, played some great rugby in South Africa, went on to play in England, in Japan, in America, and now, maybe not just yet, but about to transition from a wonderful rugby career into a really cool and important space in the world of sport. He's the original Sasha Fineberg Mgomozulu, and he's my guest on the Dan Nicholls Show this week, Tim Swiel.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholls Show.